Thank you very much, Lila. It's great to be here. As Gonzalo said, payments has become exciting. So I'm really glad to be here today to share the excitement with you. This morning, I'd like to talk about the shift towards electronic payments, or as the title of my remarks says, the journey towards a near cashless payment system, and your video here was very appropriate given the title of my remarks. For some decades, people have been speculating that we might one day go cashless, that there'd no longer be a need for banknotes to make regular payments, and that almost all our payments would be electronic. So far, though, this speculation has been exactly that. It's been speculation. But it does now, though, look like a turning point has been reached. It's now easier than it has been in the past to conceive of a world in which banknotes are used for relatively few payments, that cash becomes a relatively niche payment instrument. Given this, I'd like to structure my remarks this morning around three broad themes. The first is that the shift to electronic payments is occurring quite quickly, and that's likely to continue. And this shift is likely to be a positive development for our collective welfare. The second point is that if we are to realise the benefits of moving to a near cashless payment system, the electronic system needs to offer the functionality, the safety, and the reliability that people require. People need to have confidence that the electronic system will be operating when they need to make their payments and that will deliver the payment services they need. The third point is that as we undertake this journey towards a near cashless payment system, there will be greater focus on the cost of electronic payments. If almost all our payments are electronic, then the cost of making those payments matters more than it used to. The electronic system needs to be as efficient as it can be and to be characterised by strong competition. And in my view, there's further work to be done here. So first, the shift to electronic payments. The Reserve Bank conducts regular surveys of how Australians make their payments, and the next survey will be undertaken towards the end of next year. Until then, perhaps the best illustration of the declining use of cash for transactions is the sharp decline in the number and value of ATM withdrawals. And you can see this here. Around the turn of the decade, Australians went to the ATM on average around 40 times a year. Today, that average has fallen to around 25 times, and I expect it to come down further. At the same time as the use of cash for payments has been declining, the number of electronic payments has been growing very strongly. Today, Australians make, on average, nearly 500 electronic payments a year. That's up from 100 a year around the turn of the century. New payment technologies are being developed that will further encourage this shift to electronic payments, and perhaps the most significant of these is the new payments platform, which has made it possible for people to make real-time payments to one another without banknotes. And a range of payment apps are also under development which would have the same effect. So I think the direction of change here is pretty clear. There also continues to be a sharp decline in the use of cheques. This is pretty evident from this next chart. In the mid-1990s, Australians on average made around 45 cheque payments per year. Today, on average, we make three cheque payments a year. Given this trend is likely to continue, it will be appropriate at some point to wind up the cheque system, given the high fixed costs involved in operating that system. I don't think we've reached that point yet, but it may not be too far away. Before we do, it's important that alternative payment methods are available, and progress has been made here, but I think, again, further progress is required. It's worth pointing out that despite the decline in the use of cash, the value of banknotes on issue relative to the size of the economy is close to the highest level it's been in 50 years. So you can see in this graph here, for every Australian, there are currently 30 $50 notes on issue and 14 $100 notes on issue. There are more 50s and 100s than the other notes per Australian, as you can see. So cash remains important in the economy. There is an apparent paradox between the declining use of cash and the rising value of banknotes on issue. The main explanation here is that people, including non-residents, choose to hold a share of their wealth in Australian banknotes. The opportunity cost of doing this is low at the moment because of the low level of interest rates. At some point, this will change. While it's difficult to predict the future, I expect that banknotes will remain part of our payment system for some years to come. In some situations, paying with banknotes is quicker and more convenient than paying electronically, although this advantage has declined over time. Some people also simply prefer paying in cash. In our 2016 survey of payment use, around 14% of Australians said they had a preference for using cash simply because of its budgeting use. They found it easier to budget with cash than using electronic payment methods. As we heard in the video, banknotes also allow payments to be made anonymously in a way that's not possible in systems that leave an electronic fingerprint. This privacy aspect is valued by some people, as we saw. In many circumstances, this desire for privacy is entirely legitimate, but in others it has more to do with tax evasion and illegal activities. Perhaps a more important source of ongoing demand for cash is the fact that you can use cash in many circumstances where you can't use an electronic payment. If the internet's not up, if the electricity system is not working, if the bank systems are not operational, you can still use cash. Banknotes are therefore an important emergency or backup payment instrument, and they're particularly useful in the case of a natural disaster or the failure of the electronic system. Perhaps one day these systems will be so robust that you won't need a backup payment instrument, but that day still seems some way off. Overall, the shift to electronic payments that's occurring makes a lot of sense. It's similar to other aspects of our lives where things that used to be physical are now supplemented or replaced with technology. In my view, this shift is likely to promote our collective welfare. And I say that even though the Reserve Bank's the producer of banknotes and we earn significant income, or as it's known, seigniorage, for the taxpayer from the use of banknotes. The greater use of electronic payment methods brings efficiencies with lower costs and more functionality for users. One example of this is the reduced tender time involved in card transactions due to the contactless technology. There are also non-trivial production and distribution costs involved in the cash system. Some of these costs are fixed, so the average cost of cash transactions is likely to rise as the value of cash transactions falls. Looking ahead, there's only limited scope for fundamental innovation in the cash system compared with the scope for innovation in electronic payments. So in my view, this journey we're on is in our national interest. I'd like now to discuss three interrelated factors that will influence how quickly we undertake that journey. These are the functionality offered by the electronic system, the safety of that system, and the reliability of that system. The other fact that's also relevant is the cost, and I'll touch on that a bit later. The rapid adoption of contactless payments in Australia shows that Australians change how they pay quite quickly when the functionality is offered. Contactless card payments were slow to take off, but once the critical mass was established, they have grown very quickly in Australia. In our 2013 consumer payment study, contactless payments accounted for over 20% of point-of-sale card payments. 3 years later, they accounted for 60%, and I suspect when we do our survey next year, the number will be considerably higher again. So the functionality of the electronic payment system matters a lot. The development of the electronic payment system took a major step forward earlier this year with the launch of the NPP. This system allows people to make payments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, using just a simple identifier such as a mobile phone number or an email address. It also allows a lot of information to accompany the payment. I expect that over time this extra functionality will further reduce the use of cash in the economy, and it will improve the efficiency of our payment system. The number of transactions through the NPP is steadily increasing, as you can see in this chart. After a relatively low-key start, there are now around 400,000 NPP transactions per day, and over 2 million PayIDs have been registered, and I expect further growth to continue as the banks roll out services to their customers. The concept behind the NPP is that so-called overlay services are developed, and that these overlay services offer new functionality that utilise the real-time capability of the NPP. The first overlay service offers a basic account-to-account payment. Among the subsequently planned overlay services are ones that will allow someone to send a request to pay perhaps to a friend for their share of a meal. Another overlay service would allow a link to a document to be sent with the payment, and this could include a payslip or a detailed record of the transaction. It was originally anticipated that these two overlay services would be up and running not long after the NPP launch. Unfortunately, though, this timeline has slipped. A number of the major banks have also been slower than was originally expected to roll out NPP functionality to their entire customer base. And this is in contrast to the capability offered by the smaller financial institutions, which from day one were able to provide NPP services to their customers. Given the slow pace of rollout by the banks and the prospect of delays for additional overlay services, I recently wrote to the major banks on behalf of the Payment System Board seeking updated timelines and a commitment that these timelines will be satisfied. And it's very important that these commitments are met. It's worth observing that in other countries where the banks have been slow to develop payment applications to meet the needs of the public, other payment applications emerge. China is perhaps the best example of this with the use of QR code-based payments. I expect that NPP will provide the backbone for our electronic payment system for many years to come. But for this to be the case, the system will need to provide the functionality that people require, and it will need to do that on a timely basis. There are a range of fintech firms that are excited by the capabilities offered by the NPP and the potential for new innovative payment solutions. In October, the RBA issued a consultation paper seeking views on the functionality and access arrangements of the NPP. In particular, we're interested in views on whether the various ways of accessing NPP and the various technical and eligibility requirements are adequate for different business models, and we look forward to completing that consultation. A topic that I get asked about from time to time is whether the functionality of the electronic system would be enhanced by the RBA issuing an electronic version of the Australian dollar, an EAUD, if you like. And I spoke about this issue at this conference last year, concluding that we did not see a public policy case for moving in this direction at this time. In particular, it's not clear that RBA-issued electronic banknotes would provide something that account-to-account transfers through the banking system could not, particularly with the emergence of NPP. And another important consideration was the implications for financial stability. So a year on from the previous conference, our views on this issue have not changed. A second important influence on the rate at which we shift to a more electronic payment system is the public's confidence in the security of that system. Given this, a recent focus of the Payment System Board has been on the high and increasing level of fraud in card-not-present transactions. Card-not-present fraud rose by 15% last year and now represents 87% of the total scheme fraud losses. In contrast, the industry has had success in addressing fraud in card-present transactions with the introduction of chip technology and the switch to PINs. Despite this, growth in e-commerce activity has provided new opportunities for would-be fraudsters. The Payment System Board has identified the rise in card-not-present fraud as a priority. In August this year, the Board welcomed AusPayNet's publication of a draft industry framework to mitigate card-not-present fraud, and the Board strongly supports the continued collaboration in this area. A separate but not unrelated priority for the industry is to progress work on digital identity. This is another area where barriers to effective coordination can arise. I'm very pleased that AusPayNet is undertaking work here under the auspices of the Australian Payments Council. Digital identity is likely to become increasingly important as more and more activity takes place online, and the RBA is highly supportive of industry efforts on this issue, and it views it as an important issue for substantive progress to be made. A third factor is the confidence that people have that they will be able to use their electronic payment methods when they need to make their payments. As I noted earlier, people will still want to hold and use banknotes if they can't be sure that the electronic system will be available when they need to use it. In a consumer payment survey in 2016, We ask people why they held cash in places outside their wallet. The most common response from nearly half of respondents that it was for emergency transaction needs. And I myself saw the benefits of this over the weekend. Last week, I had fraud on my own credit card account, and all my accounts and cards got frozen. So over the weekend, I had to resort to my emergency cash usage to make my payments. So this issue is very much top of mind for me at the moment. Over recent times, there's also been a number of serious operational incidents that have interrupted the payment system. On some occasions, these have been caused by problems in the telecommunications companies, and at other times by problems at the banks. And in August, an operational incident at the RBA as a result of problems with routine fire tests saw a number of RBA core systems unavailable for some hours, including the fast settlement services supporting the MPP. So we all need to do better here. As we rely less on cash, outages affecting retail transactions can have a very significant impact on businesses and on individuals. So continued effort needs to be made by all participants in the system to reduce operational problems. If this does not happen, then it is possible that the Payment System Board would have to consider setting some standards in this area. My third broad point is about the cost of electronic payments and the importance of competition. As we move to a predominantly electronic world, there will be more focus on the cost of operating the electronic payment system and how those costs are allocated between those making and receiving payments. Looking forward, I expect that the cost of electronic payments will decline further due to both advances in technology and to economies of scale. Even so, there are significant costs to operate the electronic system, including the cost for front and back end systems needed to maintain accounts, the costs necessary to deliver functionality and convenience to users, as well as the cost in preventing fraud and ensuring resilience. How these costs are managed and who pays for them will have a significant bearing on the efficiency of the overall system. In terms of card payments, merchants in Australia pay less than merchants in many other countries. The comparison with the United States is particularly stark. As you can see here, for credit cards, Australian merchants, on average, pay 0.8% of the transaction value for MasterCard and Visa transactions. In the United States, the figure is much higher at 2.2%. There are also differences in the cost of debit cards and American Express cards between the two countries. Now, the main reason for lower merchant costs in Australia is our lower interchange fees. These fees were reduced here as a result of regulation by the Reserve Bank in 2003. The RBA's reforms reduced average interchange fees in the Visa and MasterCard systems by around 45 basis points. This has been reflected in lower merchant service fees, as is evident in this chart. In addition, as a result of competitive pressures, including from the removal of the no surcharge rules, fees on American Express and Diners Club have also fallen over time. Notwithstanding this reduction in interchange fees, these fees still represent, on average, around 60% of the total merchant service fee on credit cards. So they remain an important part of the total cost of merchants. Conversely, these fees mean that the cardholder's bank gets paid each time the card is used. This has meant the cost to consumers of using these cards is often relatively low, and in some cases, cardholders actually get subsidised to use the card, either through reward points or interest-free credit. This subsidy is provided by the cardholder's bank, but ultimately is paid for by the merchants. This close link between interchange and merchant costs means that there continues to be significant focus on interchange and its implications for the distribution of costs between merchants and consumers. For example, there have been recent recommendations from the Black Economy Task Force and the Productivity Commission for the Reserve Bank to consider regulatory action to lower or even ban interchange fees. And the Payment System Board will again examine the arguments for lower interchange fees when it next conducts a formal review of a card payment system. On the competition front, one area that merits close attention is the market for acquiring services. This has come into sharper focus as a result of concerns about the cost to merchants in the debit card system, where most cards allowed for transactions to be processed by either of the two networks enabled on the card. The long-standing view of the Payment System Board has been that merchants should at least have the choice of sending the debit payment through the lower cost system, whether that be FPOS or the international scheme. But for merchants to be able to do this requires the acquirers to offer terminals and technical systems enabling the least cost routing of the transaction. Some acquirers have already completed the necessary work and they're attracting new merchants. Others, including the major banks, made commitments earlier in the year regarding the timetable for this work to be completed. And partly on the basis of those commitments, the Payment System Board made a decision not to regulate in this area. Since then, I regret to say there's been slippage by some who have cited technical problems. It's important that the major banks get back on track here. A failure to deliver on commitments or to provide the payment services that the community needs will inevitably lead to calls for further regulation. Looking beyond interchange and acquiring competition, new technologies open up the prospect of new payment options developing. And recently there's been much discussion on the role that so-called big tech firms might eventually play. These firms have potential advantages over existing providers of payment services. In some cases, their technology and systems are more flexible. They have greater ability to use and process information. They have well-established networks which they can leverage, and they are often better at interacting with their users and customers. Now, given this, one scenario is that these firms become significant players in the payments industry. They might be able to do this through developing new payment applications that provide a commercial return, not through charging for payment services, but by commercialising the value of the information that they obtain as a byproduct of offering these payment services. If this scenario were to play out, it could significantly change the payments landscape, providing both merchants and consumers new payment options at low monetary cost. At the same time, though, it would open up a number of important issues related to data privacy, ownership, and security. The probability of big tech firms entering the payments arena is higher if merchants and consumers feel that the existing payment systems do not offer the services that they need and/or the prices they're being charged are too high. As I noted earlier, where banks have been slow to respond, other payment applications have emerged. This scenario also highlights a broader point. The way that people are charged for payments is complex and it's changing. Amongst other things, it's influenced by interchange fees, how the value of information is commercialised and the commercial pressure on banks. It's difficult to predict how things will ultimately play out, but these are the issues the Payment System Board continues to keep a close eye on. To conclude, I expect that this shift to electronic payments will continue. The issues of functionality, security, reliability, and cost are central to the development of the system and the pace at which we undertake the journey. The Payment System Board will be keeping a close eye on these issues. While I've talked about a near cashless payment system, I want to emphasise that we don't yet envisage a world without banknotes. The RBA is committed to providing cash consistent with the demand by users and to support the distribution of cash through the economy. Our development of the new series of banknotes is a clear commitment to ensuring that cash continues to have public confidence and that it meets the needs of the community. The launch of NPP this year was a very big step for the industry, and it's a credit to all of the staff at the participating organisations who worked so hard over the life of the project to bring it to fruition. As I mentioned, though, there are some things that still need to be done for the full benefits of NPP to be available to end users. I'm optimistic that these things will be done and that this new infrastructure will provide great payments functionality for all Australians. Thank you very much, and I look forward to answering some questions.
Thank you very much, Governor. That was a fascinating address, and we're deeply appreciative of the time that you've taken to prepare and to come and spend a part of the morning with us. So we will open up to a couple of questions. We don't have a lot of time, but we have some roving mics. David.
Well, there is a lot of interest in it here, but with the account-to-account transfer system in real time through the NPP, the issue we've been trying to understand is what extra benefit would an electronic banknotes deliver over and above that? And at the moment, we struggle to think what those extra benefits would be. One possibility was that you could make payments privately, because if you use the account-to-account transfer system, you do leave an electronic fingerprint each time you make a payment. If you use a physical banknote, you don't leave an electronic fingerprint, and you could design an electronic banknote that didn't leave a fingerprint. But from my perspective, that doesn't form the basis of a public policy case for us to issue electronic banknotes so that people can make transactions without leaving fingerprints. I think in countries where you don't have the equivalent of the NPP, the case for the central bank doing this is much stronger. But we have a world-class, world-leading technology here, and I think that's the best way for people to make real-time payments.
Governors, Julian Bykowski from IT News. Just two really quick ones. First on fraud, and the elephant in the room being the pass-through to the merchant community of the cost of fraud. Just very interested in your views on the sustainability of how that's currently done and whether there needs to be some adjustment there. And the second one is on the direct debit incident that happened, I think, about a week ago involving RACV and Merchant Acquirer NAB and people losing tens of thousands of dollars out of their accounts and not getting it back for as long as 5 days. Just wondering if you think that that's an acceptable time frame.
I don't really want to comment on that, the second issue, because I just don't know enough about the detail, and sorry. On fraud, the solution here is to reduce the fraud costs in the system. And this is why the work on the card not present fraud is so important. I mean, fraud ends up being a cost to our merchants, but it also reduces people's confidence in the system. And if people don't have confidence in the system, they're less likely to use it. So what we've got to focus on here is getting the fraud rates down. It's an issue for merchants and for consumer confidence. It's really important that we get to do this, because if fraud in the system keeps rising, then people won't want to use electronic payment methods. They'll say, well, I may as well use cash instead, which is not the right solution, is it?
Yep, absolutely. We've got one in the front and one in the third row. Right, we'll start there and then we'll come back to you. Jackie.
Hi. You mentioned the importance of digital identity and the work that AusPayNet is doing under the council around this. Can you share some more insight into the value that you think this will bring to the economy and to Australians?
Well, I mean, as I talked about, everything's moving electronic, and so kind of maintaining the integrity of the identity system in an electronic world is incredibly important. I think to get the benefits of open data, we need a very strong electronic digital identity system. My concern has been that Australia is falling behind here. Look what's happening in some particular European countries; they've moved further forward. What I see, and this is a common issue in the payment system, is a coordination issue. One institution wants to do it this way, another says they want to do it this way, and the government sometimes wants to do it a third way. So there are a lot. I think everyone agrees something should be done, but we all want to do it slightly differently, don't we? So the role that I'm hoping that AusPayNet can play here is help solve the coordination problem. Because we need everyone to get round the table and say there's something that we need to do in the national interest. It mightn't be my particular interest to do it this way or that way, but it's in the national interest. And solving the coordination problem, I think, is a really important thing for AusPayNet with the Australian Payments Council to do it. And when we met with the Payments Council earlier in the year, we emphasised the importance of getting this work done. And that requires institutions to compromise on their particular model, but in the national interest. If that doesn't happen, then ultimately you'd have to look at regulatory solutions, which is not the preferred outcome.
Right, we've got one question in the second row.
Lance Blockley from the Initiatives Group. Given that most people in the room probably haven't touched a $100 banknote for quite some time, probably years, is there not a case for when the new series is launched to put a termination date on the old series to bring them back in and then not perhaps reissue quite so many?
There are 14 out there for every single person in the country. I don't have my share. I don't know whether anyone in this room has. The best we can tell is that people are holding these notes as a store of value. And the low level of interest rates makes it not very costly to do that, although there are the storage and theft risks. We thought about the possibility of not issuing a new $100 note when time comes to do that. But the judgment we've reached is that if we didn't issue a $100 note, people who want to hold them would hold two 50s. And so we have to produce twice as many 50s to kind of make up the 100, and there are significant production costs involved in this. So we didn't think that this would, not offering 100 would fundamentally change the underlying demand for cash as a store of value. And so people would move into 50s and we'd have to produce more 50s, and so we wouldn't gain anything. So that's our current judgment.
Well, I think we're out of time now, and I always love to listen to the Governor in a questions and answers session, because I always find his knowledge so deep and wide. And so on behalf of Australian Payments Network and Currency Research, we'd like to thank you so much, Governor, for your insightful remarks, and we wish you well for the rest of the day.
Good luck with
thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Governor.